The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
And some of us, my friends, know not only what we see when we're over there, but we know also what is prophesied. And we know what is prophesied to rise up in Europe. And we know which is the one and the only nation in Europe that is capable of dominating, and which is the economic and the industrial heart of all Europe, without which there could be no stability and strength. A human body cannot live without its heart. And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
Hello and welcome to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Stephen Flurry. And if you're a regular listener, you're probably very familiar with that little soundbite we just started the show with. I think it is our most frequently played soundbite, at least our most frequently played one from Mr. Armstrong. Europe's heart is in Germany. But are you sure that's correct? Can you prove it? Do you really know why Mr. Armstrong said that Europe's heart is in Germany? In many ways, this whole subject gets to the heart of what was one of Mr. Armstrong's signature prophecies, the rise of Germany, the rise of a 10-nation superpower in Europe dominated by Germany. That was the subject of the very first cover article of the very first print edition, or the very first edition period of the Plain Truth magazine. Of course, way back then, they didn't even have anything close to resembling the internet or computers. When it comes to understanding world news, this is one of the most important subjects to watch. I just finished this morning recording a short segment for our website, for a regular feature we have now, This Week in Germany. We watch Germany like we do just about no other country. But why? What makes Germany the heart of Europe? Why do we even need to watch Germany? Now, if you're a regular listener, I doubt you'll disagree that we do need to watch Germany or any of that, but can you really explain why Germany is at the heart of Europe? Well, that's what I hope to do today. And let's start by looking at some numbers. Germany leads Europe in a whole number of ways, and these factors all build off each other. The first that we'll look at, for example, is population. Now, Germany is the most populous nation in Europe. Now, it's big, but it's nowhere close to being a majority of Europe's population. But when you look at this advantage population and then how it ties in and builds off all the other advantages, it's as they all play together that you then really get this picture of a dominant Germany. Now, the population of the EU as a whole, once you take out the UK, is 680 million. We know the UK is on its way out. The Brexit talks and things like that are very much in the news these days. And Germany is the most populous nation of Europe with 82 million, so somewhere around 12% of the total. It's near rivals in terms of large countries, with the UK on the way out of France, 67 million, Italy, 61 million. Now, largest population, especially when it comes to an advanced power that doesn't struggle to feed all its people, it often translates into more power, bigger economies, bigger military potential. In a political union, it's especially helpful in this regard. California, for example, they make up about 12% of America's population. A very similar proportion of America's population as Germany makes up of Europe's population. And as the saying goes, as goes California, so goes the nation. And in recent years, that trend has been less the case, mostly because California's economy and its economic supremacy has been slipping. It's no longer just that economic dynamo, and some of that has been shifting, say, to other large states like Texas. And it's been having a lot of problems. But California's population gives it real power within the United States. And the same is true with Germany. And you see this, for example, in EU voting rules. So for a measure to be supported in the European Union and certain ways of voting, 65% of the EU's population must vote to support a measure. And so when you're looking at a population counting, well, then Germany, with its largest population, has the most important vote there. Now, there's the EU voting procedures and different bodies are hugely complicated, but that's still a very important, that qualified majority voting in the European Council is a very important way of votes getting passed through. Now, the difference with the European Union versus the United States is that the European Union is not the integrated superpower that the United States is. It's nowhere near as closely politically integrated as the United States, which actually makes Germany within that whole even more powerful, because it's much easier for then Germany to throw its weight around, to muscle other countries around in a way that California couldn't think about doing, of using its economy to get its way. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. But there you see Germany's population playing a major role in its power. Now, another way that Germany dominates Europe, or leads Europe, is that it's the largest economy in Europe. The largest economy. It dominates the European economy even more than it does population. Currently, Germany's economy is one-fifth, 20% of the EU's total. Once Britain is out, Germany alone will be an entire quarter of Europe's economy. Its GDP, it's basically a measure of it, the annual output of its economy, is $1 trillion bigger than France's, which is, again, with Britain out, its nearest rival. France's GDP stands at about 2.4 trillion. Germany is 3.4 trillion. Germany's economy is almost twice the size of Italy's. And then when you look at the Eurozone alone, those nations that share the euro, Germany's dominance is even bigger. It's very roughly 30% of the economy. And this has, again, just like the population, very practical effects. So, for example, the amount each EU nation pays into the euro bailout fund is roughly proportional to the size of their economy. And their vote in how that bailout fund is used is in the same proportion as the amount of money they pay in. And so this means Germany has a 27% stake in the Europe's bailout fund. And that gives them a huge amount of power. That means that they alone can just about veto any decision that the fund makes. I mean, they control over a quarter of the votes in that fund. It's not too hard for them to find allies among some of the smaller nations or the other nations of Northern Europe, nations that tend to think alike when it comes to Europe's economy, like the Netherlands, Finland. And they can quite easily cobble together a majority there. And they basically control that bailout fund. And it's not surprising at all that the head of the bailout fund in Europe is German. So this in turn means that if you want a Eurozone bailout, you need Germany's approval. You're not getting any money without it. And really, if Germany pulled out in some form from that bailout fund, the whole thing would basically collapse. The control that that money gives over Europe, you know, that's a huge amount of power. That's why we saw Germany dictating terms to Cyprus, to Greece. Now, related to this fact that Germany is the largest economy of Europe is that Germany is also it's the healthiest large economy in Europe. So again, just to give some quick and simple figures, Germany's unemployment rate is 3.9%. Greece's is 23.5%. A huge gulf. Across southern Europe, several countries have huge unemployment rates. Spain is nearly 18.2%, which these are giant figures. This is, you know, one in five people who are willing and able to work can't find a job. Cyprus, 12.5%. Even France, which is by no means kind of a pauper of Europe, they're unemployment rate is 10.1%, over 10%, compared to 3.9% in Germany. No other large EU country comes anywhere close to having Germany's level of unemployment. The only exception would be the United Kingdom. I think that's on around 4.5%. But as we've said, the UK is on its way out. The average for the EU as a whole is 9.5%, way higher than Germany's. So you've got a Europe that's full of, at least when it comes to its large economy, sick economies, struggling economies, economies with huge burdens of unemployment payouts and welfare states, unemployment and countries mired in debt. And then you have Germany, a lean economy with ultra-low unemployment rates, where actually its government is bringing in more money than it's spending in taxes, something even the United States could only dream about. It's a large, it's a healthy economy. If you look at youth unemployment, it's even more stark. In Germany, youth unemployment is 7%. The EU average is, or that might actually be the Eurozone average, but it's three times higher, 21%. Greece, it's nearly 50%, nearly half of all people aged 16 to 25 who are wanting to work can't find a job. Spain, 44%. Italy, nearly 40%. France, 25%. So Germany is healthy right now while everyone else is struggling. And so these other large economies of Europe, France, Italy, you know, they're not capable of bailing out countries to the way that Germany is. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't any major struggles or challenges when it comes, or vulnerabilities when it comes to Germany's economy. You know, there are challenges that face all of Europe. But their ability to make money far surpasses the rest of the European Union. And this kind of checkbook power translates into all kinds of other areas when it comes to Europe and the European Union. For example, George Friedman wrote for his website Geopolitical Futures last year, collaborating on defense budgets with each nation contributing based on economic size would mean that Germany would be both the leading economic and military power in Europe. Within the EU, Germany is first among equals. Creating a substantial military force would cement that. So as soon as you're looking about sharing funds for anything when it comes into Europe, the fact that Germany, with its largest and healthy economy, is going to be paying the biggest share, well, it means they're always going to get the biggest vote. And you see exactly how that works in the European bailout fund, where their biggest vote is translated to a German head of the bailout fund and essential German control. So when you're talking about doing defense, anything really on an EU level, Germany with the biggest economy is always going to have the biggest say and therefore be the biggest power. And then a final factor that's really behind Germany being at the, or proving Germany is right there at the heart of Europe, is Germany's geography. And this is a factor that's there behind a lot of the others that we've talked about. Germany dominates the northern European plain. Friedman wrote that any country located in the middle of the northern plain of Europe will be important, whether fragmented, as Germany was during the Holy Roman Empire, or united. Robert Kaplan in Revenge of Geography, he's talking more historically, but he wrote that Europe seemed destined to be ruled from what now corresponds with Germany. Now, after that, Germany was split up. But again, that's Germany's historic role in Europe. Stratfor wrote, the Rhine, the Danube, and the Elbe rivers, combined with Germany's central location in Europe and its access to the North Sea, allowed the country to become a leading exporter and one of the most prosperous economies in Europe. So geographically, Germany really is the heart of Europe, and especially the heart of Europe's trade system. Here's a quick summary from Stratfor of Europe's geography.
Germany is a country located in Central Europe, bordered by Poland, the Czech Republic, Austria, Switzerland, France, Luxembourg, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Denmark. The country has mountainous terrain in the south, dominated by the Alps, with a plateau and forests in the center and the north. The Rhine, the Danube, and the Elbe rivers, combined with Germany's central location in Europe and its access to the North Sea, allowed it to become a leading exporter and one of the most prosperous economies in Europe. Between the late 10th and early 19th centuries, the territories of today's Germany were the heart of the Holy Roman Empire, a collection of small kingdoms, principalities, duchies, and city-states. This led to the development of multiple seats of political and economic power that achieved unity in 1871. While Berlin is Germany's capital and most populous city, the country also has several economic and political centers, including Hamburg, Cologne, Munich, and Frankfurt. Germany's location in the heart of the North European plain has led to constant conflicts with its neighbors like France and Russia.
Now, throughout history, these trade links that we heard just a bit about in that clip have made Germany rich. Stratfor had an article called The Fortunes of Germany's Rhineland Flow Through the Ages. And it by the states, one cannot overstate the political and economic importance of the Rhine. The river flows from the Swiss Alps, connecting some of the wealthiest areas in Central and Northern Europe on its way to the North Sea via the Netherlands. Along with the Danube and the Elbe, the Rhine is at the very heart of Germany's economic power, which has historically depended on exports. The countless castles and fortifications along the Rhine are a reminder of its importance as a waterway. A bit further down says, but behind their fairy tale charm, these strongholds reveal something else. The states and regions with access to the Rhine became very wealthy very quickly by trading as well as collecting tolls. And then a bit further, it says, this is one of the reasons why Germany developed so many wealthy cities with so little political unity. And so these were places that were that became very rich. Many of these cities were part of the Hanseatic League, a commercial and defensive confederation of merchant guilds that flourished between the 14th and 16th centuries, spanning well beyond modern-day Estonia. So Germany's position at the heart of Europe, at the heart of these river systems, it constantly put Germany at the heart of Europe's economy. And throughout history, it has often been a major economic power. And we've already talked about how that often translates to just general political power. The Danube flows south and southeast, the Elbe and the Rhine, they flow northeast. So it's connecting with Europe in many different directions in a way that other European powers don't. But at the same time, Germany is vulnerable. It has no natural borders to the east and the west. And it's for good reason that the Romans basically drew their northern frontiers at the Rhine. If they went beyond that, they didn't have many good natural borders. They would just have to keep going and going. And so this has historically made Germany aggressive. They know that they have no natural defense. They would struggle to protect themselves against an attack from two directions. And so historically, one of their major strategies has been to attack first. So Germany, then, they really are at the heart of Europe, geographically, economically, politically. But this brings us to another important question. Do we need to fear Germany? Why do we still need to be... Okay, Germany's at the heart, but to many people, Germany looks very peaceful. Why worry? Boris Johnson, he wrote, for example, a few years ago, it is emphatically time to forget all that history and embrace the new Germany. We have absolutely nothing to fear. And in some ways, it's very easy to see why Boris Johnson and many feel that way. You know, if you look at the vast majority in Germany, you know, there's nothing sinister there saying, well, we need... You know, if you say, stood on an election platform of we need to take over Europe, that's not going to get you elected in today's Germany. That's not a popular position, at least not for the majority. Germany generally is reluctant to use its power militarily. It needs to be goaded by America to spend more on its military. But a much deeper look is important. Luigi Barzini, he wrote a best-selling book back in the 80s called The Europeans, where he kind of goes through and describes the different people of Europe. He was judging at least by the quality of writing in this book, a gifted journalist. It really is an enjoyable read. But in this, he wrote, surprisingly, all the successive chapters of the history book I read, this is about Germany, seem to describe a different country from the one a few pages before or the one that follows. He talks about just how his whole chapter on Germany is, well, the theme of that is how much and how quickly Germany changes. He talks about how in the early 1800s, nobody fears Germany, especially not German soldiers. He quotes one contemporary in the early 1800s, they fear fatigue or bad weather, as if they're all shopkeepers or literati. This is talking about the German military. Resolutions are slow, despondency is easy. Imagination, which is the predominant quality of the Germans, inspires a fear of danger. Even Machiavelli, he wrote that Germany thus enjoyed their rough life and liberty, and they do not want to go to war. That's a much earlier time, but there are certainly these periods where Germany seems very placid. And then, you know, just a few decades after people were writing this, talking about the terrible quality of the German soldiers and about how nobody feared them. He writes, going back to Luigi Barzini, then you turn a few pages in a history book, the Germans suddenly appeared completely transformed. They emerged, or they crossed the borders of France, or they emerged from the stove-heated rooms filled with pipe smoke in 1870. They crossed the borders of France as a grey tide of faceless, disciplined soldiers with spiked helmets, a relentless, unstoppable war machine. Where had they come from? Only a few Germans and no foreigner would have suspected what the imminent metamorphosis would be like. The well-drilled, well-armed, well-commanded hordes outmaneuvered, surrounded, and defeated the most glorious army in Europe in a few weeks, capturing the old and sick French Emperor and the Napoleon III, and went on to Paris and triumph in Versailles. Nothing and nobody could stop them. The German soldiers left behind ineffable memories of brutal, unfeeling cruelty. How could these Germans be so dissimilar from those harmless and peaceful people Madame de Stael had described, those whom Europe had known and loved a few years before? And Friedman makes a similar point at the start of his book, Flashpoints, talking more generally rather than Germany, but about all of Europe. He writes, imagine in 1913 attending a concert in any European capital city. Mozart and Beethoven would be on the program. It may be a cold winter night, but the hall brilliantly lit and warm with women elegantly but lightly dressed. In the grand room, winter has been banished. One of the men has just sent a telegram to Tokyo ordering silks to be shipped and arrive in Europe in a month. Another couple has travelled 100 miles in 3 hours by train to attend the concert. Just a bit further on, someone listening to Beethoven's Ninth Symphony must think of revolution, republicanism, reason, and truth be told, of man as God. The art of Europe, immanent and transcendent, the philosophy, the politics, all have taken humanity to a place it has not been before. To many it seemed they were at the gates of heaven. I think had I been alive then, I would have shared that feeling. No one expected this moment to be the preface to hell. In the next 31 years, Europe tore itself apart. The things that had made it great, technology, philosophy, politics, turned on the Europeans, or more precisely, the Europeans turned them on each other and themselves. By the end of 31 years, Europe had become a graveyard of ruined cities, shattered lives, its hold on the world cracked. The Ode to Joy from Beethoven's Ninth Symphony was no longer a celebration of European life, but an ironic mockery of its pretensions. He writes, still, the connection between European high culture and death camps is surprising at the very least. So Germany, Europe as a whole, has changed and has changed very quickly in the past. Looking at the way what people want now, the way they act now, that's not a great indication about how they will act, how their country will act in the future. That's why we have people like Nicholas Frank, whom we heard from Mr. Flurry earlier and last week, with his warnings about what could happen in Germany if the economy tanks. We can play a quick clip of that warning again quickly now.
You really feel that?
You feel so insecure about your Germany today? Yes. Is this
real? Don't trust us. And as long as we made money, everything is very democratic. But let's wait and hopefully not see if we have 5 to 10 years heavy economical problems. And the swamp is a lake and is a sea and will swallow again everything.
That's a couple of clips from Nicholas Frank there. But this is, you know, don't trust us as a message coming from beware, be careful. It's a message coming from a whole lot of people that are acquainted with this kind of history that we've talked about. And this is why warnings about Germany, they're becoming very common. They rarely make it into the news or the newspapers. But I think it's quite surprising in some ways. I don't think it's surprising. I think a lot of people would be surprised at how common these kind of warnings are in books, in discussions on this subject. For example, there's Flashpoints, a New York Times bestseller that talks about it. Here's just a quick quote from from another bestseller. This is Prisoners of Geography by Tim Marshall. And he writes, the Euro crisis and the wide economic problems have revealed cracks in the house of Europe. The dreams of ever closer union appear to be frozen or possibly even in reverse. If it is, then the German question may return. Seen through the prism of 7 decades of peace, this may seem alarmist, and Germany is among the most peaceful and democratic members of the European family. But seen through the prism of 7 centuries of European warfare, it cannot be ruled out. And as I said, those kind of statements are becoming increasingly common. Germany has a lot of power. And that power, though, is becoming increasingly under threat in this unstable world. Germany, historically, they've been vulnerable, the way that they tend to maintain their power is by going on the offensive. When threatened, the tendency is to eliminate the threat. Intentions can change, but power less so. And Germany has a lot of power. In his book, Flashpoints, Friedman, he does just a great job of going through and showing how what's just inevitable, that Germany is going to have to use the power that it has. He writes that Hannah Arendt, a post-war philosopher, once said that the most dangerous thing in the world is to be rich and weak. Wealth can only be protected by strength. A bit later on, he writes, a desperate nation will take desperate action. When steps are taken against a rich and weak country, there is little risk. As anti-German and anti-austerity sentiment rises, Germany, with vital interests, investments, markets, and so on, will become a target, and attacks on its interest will escalate. Germany will have a choice of accepting the punishment or of using its vast resources to transform wealth into power. Nations do not become strong because they feel like it, but because they must. Germany will face stark choices, and increasing its strength in all dimensions will become more bearable than the alternative. Germany will therefore become a fully fledged power, first developing its political muscles and, its time, its military ones as pressure develops. Economic, not military considerations will be driving Germany. That time is not far off. So again, you know, Germans, they don't really want world dominant right now, but if they want to maintain their economic power, which they absolutely do, they'll have to make these kind of changes. We've seen this protest or this process start in Greece. I wrote an article just earlier this week for the website of some revelations from a new book by the former Greek Prime Minister Yanis Varoufakis. And in it, he claimed that the Greek Prime Minister genuinely feared that if he defied Germany, he'd be unseated in a coup. If German leaders are pushed, this is what tends to happen. Luigi Bardini, in another quote I don't really have time to read about, quote now, he talks about German, you know, these different characteristics of Germany going to sleep, going into hibernation. Here's how Mr. Armstrong described the power that's rising now in Europe.
Now then, that Roman Empire is to be revived. It is coming out of what is called the bottomless pit. It's going to be resurrected, and it's going to last just a short time, and it'll be with 10 dictators in the territory of the ancient Roman Empire, Europe, and around the Mediterranean. There isn't any definite territory because the Roman Empire continued for many centuries, and at one stage it occupied one geographical location, and at another stage another geographical location. There isn't any definite set geographical outline that it must occupy, but it will be the old Roman Empire, essentially. It will be fascist, you can be sure of that, and it is now rising, and it's going on underground, and we seem too stupid somehow to see it. We don't realize what's going on in the world. God says it's going to come up. But this, my friends, is the final resurrection of this whole system of Gentile empires and Gentile governments.
So it goes underground. Right now it's emerging from that, and that's why you see more and more talking about it. Ultimately, you know, why do we warn about Germany? Well, you can learn a lot about the need to warn Germany just from everything we've talked about today, the history, the geography. Luigi Bardini, he says, the future of Europe appears largely to depend today, once again, for good or evil, whether we like it or not, as it did for many centuries, on the future of Germany. It is still, as Madame de Stael wrote, le cœur de l'Europe, the heart of Europe. Friedman writes, the question of Europe now once again is the question of Germany. What it wants, what it fears, what it will and won't do. This is the old question of Europe. It goes along with the oldest question in Europe. When will the next war start and where will it be fought? These are famous authors basically writing, what Germany? And they can see this just based on an understanding of world events and history. Now, we watch at the trumpet because the Bible also says, watch Germany. We have a whole book, the Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy, that you can get from our website, where you can prove what the Bible says on Germany. Mr. Armstrong, that clip, what he said in that clip comes from Revelation 17 and verse 8 that talks about this power that goes into the bottomless pit, that ascends out of it. It's called the beast that was and is not and yet is. It disappears. It comes back again. And so that's why we watch Germany closely. I mentioned that this week in Germany review that I did this morning. In that we talked about the German Interior Ministry talking about a German guiding culture or dominant culture and having Muslims that come in accept that. We talked about a far-right scandal in the German military where there was a far-right terror cell. The defense minister was saying that the whole military had a problem here, turning a blind eye to that. And we're watching those things not because we believe that the interior minister is a closet Nazi or we believe that these neo-Nazi cells are going to take over the German military. We're watching them because we're watching for signs of this beast rising back out of this bottomless pit. And as I said, there are already many signs. It is rising right now, and there are so many signs of that. We're watching these all these indications of broader, more fundamental changes within Germany.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.